burping is allowed.
Gurgling is not allowed.
We haven't crossed that line yet. Not saying it won't happen.
We have John, Shota and Ramaz here.
Ramaz comes from a family that was always farming grapes and making wine in Emirati. It was largely for the family's use. I don't know, how long ago did you start from us making your own wine?
When I was 25.
How long ago was that?
You're
looking
wine.
Very young,
Ramaz,
so we can't tell. We can't tell how long
I'm,
ago that was.
I'm always worked with my family.
Yeah.
In the vineyard and in cellar from my childhood, but it's coming one time when son and father begin fighting to how to do something. So he just gave me the one small vineyard. You can do what you want, and it was 25 years old, I was.
More than I was doing it.
It was about 16 years ago. You're 41?
Yeah. No. 44.
44.
Okay, so almost 20 years producing wine. Why did you decide that you wanted to continue with that?
No, I love wine, so I made the wine and I drink it and share with friends.
For me, what's interesting about wine is you're connected with the land, which I think is really important and something today is not common. I think we're very out of touch. And it's and like you said, this feeling of sharing, and I think that's what makes wine a very interesting topic.
My vineyards, which I use now, were planted my father's grandfather. So if he decide to take everything, poison the soil, what I must to do. It's a respect with the terroir, with the land, with the escapes.
So what you mean is, your father's grandfather was working respectfully from the soil rather than using loads of chemicals to maybe get loads of grapes just for him and then screw everything up for the generations to follow. And Shota, you're quite young as a winemaker, making very amazing wines, and you're in Eastern Georgia, but you're not in the same region as John, who we're going to meet after. But can you tell us a bit about you?
Yeah, it's close by from John's place. I have not such a rich experience with wine making like Ramaz, but my father was always making wine at home. So it was like 100, 200 liters per year. Mm-hmm. And it was just for families, very usual in Georgia. And actually that's my experience and knowledge which I have about wine. I never had some professional study in wine. What I know, it comes from practice 100% and from the friends which I have, and they giving me lots of advices and experience.
Parshi ro daizgeik samzareuloshi mushaoba ik moizamle mere shem seriozula.
We're going to get a translation on that.
That's a little Georgian language. Grandma said when we let you work for us as a cook at our wine bar, that's when you really got infected with winemaking.
Uh-huh.
And actually the decision why I made, it's happened in 2014 when I decided to do that. Was of course inspiration, and this inspiration was coming that I always wanted to have a good wine. Because my father were making, but I always going some different places in Georgia, and homemade wine, which is very famous in Georgia and every family makes, it's not perfect. So sometimes it's very bad, and in my young time...
Sometimes it's very great.
Yeah, sometimes it's great too. It depends the person who makes the wine. I never had my own wine like Ramaz. His father gave the vineyard, but I never had my own. And that's why me and my friend, we bought a small vineyard in 2014. Cool. And we're starting the organic things inside. And in 2015, we had the first harvest. And we had the 900 bottles and the 500 we drink ourselves with our friends.
That's a perfect
testing,
business model.
Right?
Very good business model. Sure to be successful.
Yeah, but yeah, we are excited because... we never had a chance to the work with quarries because it was more kept in West Georgia than eastern part. Eastern part, the oak barrels, old oak barrels, which were coming from the factories, people were using to make wine inside. Like we have several at home. No experience with Quevery, no experience with wine making independently.
So
and
Quevery, just so everybody knows, as we're tuning in, is the Georgian word for a clay vessel, which we also known as
Eris, Amphora, Tinas,
exactly, yeah. Just so we have that reference.
But yeah, the difference is the Georgian Quevery is buried in the ground. So you're harvesting that thermal temperature in the earth, and that's the exception to the rest of the clay pot traditions that are not actually implanted in the soil.
Not somewhere in the
Shutter, before we move on to John, what's the name of your region? Did you say that?
Because it's Kakheti, the region we are Kakheti.
It's in the western part of Kakheti, okay. And I'm in the eastern part. So
because the
it's in one
different
valley, yeah, okay. But just he's on one side of the valley and I'm at the opposite side of the valley, so I'm on the east.
Yeah.
He's saying that you should have sheep on your label.
Yeah, actually, because my roots comes from the mountains, so my ancestors came from the mountains about 200 years ago, but they never stopped this connection. But my ancestors were shepherds, almost all of them. But then we, in the lowland, we lost these roots because we mixed with the lowland local people. And I went in the university, so my father was not shepherd anymore.
Okay.
And that's why, but this is one of the perfect places in Kakheti, with the soil and with the climate, because we are very close to the mountains and we have very late harvest.
Okay. It looked quite green when I saw pictures of your vineyard. It did look different to... That's why I thought it was a different region.
Because
it
looked
fresh.
It's more humidity.
Yeah, we are like 2 weeks late always from the Jones place. Okay. Even the flowering or harvest and everything. Sometimes more. It depends the year. And because we have a late harvest, our grapes and the stems are always ripe mostly. That's why we can use a long skin contact and we never get very unpleasant and strong tannins in the wine. And mostly alcohol is always high. But I had a year.
15.78.
Yes.
On the label, it's 0.78.
But it's very
down
fresh.
Down to details.
It's very fresh nonetheless, okay. Which is interesting. You know, you can have a wine with not too much alcohol that smells quite hot and alcoholic, and you can have a wine with higher alcohol that's actually really refreshing.
Yeah, I think it comes from the stems, and actually I always have argue about stems. I love stems, okay. And I think it's exactly like part of the grapes, and has a like right to be in the wine.
Because it gives this perception of freshness.
Yeah, exactly. The ripe stems, I think, gives a very good freshness to the wine, which in my case covers strong alcohol in the wine. For example.
So it works in a balance.
Yeah.
Right. It's
a
choice
it
that you
makes
make
some
on.
Balance, I think.
Category
right.
That fits in on the area.
Yeah, he's from the West Georgia,
totally
but
disagree.
He's against that.
Okay. Yeah, but that's the thing. It's a choice. It's a tool in your repertoire to decide based on.
Yeah. If we, in Georgia, we call the skin contact, leave wine with mother. So it's a very old say, and this comes from the generations. And
a wine mother, like a bread mother, like a
mother, exactly.
And cheese starter or anything else.
If you call the berry skins the mother, definitely the stems are included in the mother too. So when we separate,
I think there's gonna be a fight. Right?
Yeah,
I see some steam coming off of Ramaz's head.
But that's the thing, right? All of these things are choices that you make based on where you are and how you want it to taste. And if you're from a region that doesn't need that extra freshness because your alcohol's not that high,
maybe some mother has stems, some don't.
Yeah, you know,
some mothers have stems, some don't.
Yeah, right. But that's the thing; it's a choice.
Yeah, or
what
children.
Some mothers have stems and some don't.
It's going to be a hashtag later. Viral hashtag.
Yeah, but the kids sometimes growing without mother and
they turn out just
perfect,
fine.
Yeah, perfect person. So it happens everything.
You're saying that Ramaz's wine is orphans.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Parentless.
Oh, God. We don't need it like a Georgian.
Yeah,
do we?
But that idea, I think when I started making wine, I was very, very emotional with wine. So And in Georgia, it's very easy because you have lots of stories from the past, which telling you that the berries and the wine comes from the sun, because we say that when it's ready, the grapes, sun eye goes.
The eye of the sun enters the berry.
Enters the berry.
Time for operation. But in pagan times, I mean, Georgia's also had a strong Christian history, like many wine countries, but from the 4th century AD, it was Christian. But before that, there was very strong pagan traditions in Georgia, and there was a belief that the vine was always trying to ascend as close to the sun god as possible, and the roots were always trying to penetrate as deep into the earth goddess as possible. And the child of the earth goddess and the sun god was wine. And it's still in practice, what Shota said, you know, at the time of the changing of color of the grapes. They say the eye of the sun has entered the berries, therefore we can harvest.
But that's great, because that's like that's how you pass knowledge down through generations in these traditions.
Another
through
term,
you know? Love it.
Another term for wine was liquid sunlight.
See, that's the connectivity that we were saying earlier, that like I think a lot of people miss out on these days, that connection to all the things around, that when you have a long history or a rich history, you're still connected to it because those traditions are still being passed on, which I think a lot of like newer wine regions sometimes forget about.
And John, tell us a little bit about you, because I've known you for maybe 7 or 8 years now.
7 years,
yeah. And you're very much sort of an ambassador for Georgian culture, and you are, I think of you as Georgian, even though your background, you weren't born in Georgia.
Right.
But I've learnt a lot about Georgia through you, and the different times of meeting you, trying the wines, exchanging ideas, history and tasting and events and different things. But what led you to Georgia?
Actually, initially, the initial attraction to Georgia was not connected directly to wine. It was Georgian polyphonic songs. However, later I learned that the polyphonic songs are usually sung when Georgians are drinking.
So there is a connection. Yeah.
Sounds like it was a tough learning period for you, learning about the music, drinking lots of wine.
I found a CD at a secondhand record shop that I was probably looking for Minor Threat or Dead Kennedys,
right,
or some sort of skate rock. And on the front shelf that day of the music shop that I went into, they had a CD called Georgian Folk Music Today. And when I played it, I was mesmerized. The harmonies just totally attracted me. And I was curious and wanted to go to Georgia, but in 1991, Georgia was pretty much soaked in blood. There were 3 wars going on. There was a civil war and 2 successionist wars in Abkhazia and South Ossetia. It was quite difficult, next to impossible, for a foreigner to come. And I ended up, for different reasons, studying painting, doing a master's degree in visual arts in Moscow. And when I was there, I was able to learn a little bit of Georgian language and hear lots of recordings of Georgian music. And I went there in 1995 for the first time. The host, the man who had invited me, he owned a brewery, so even though in 1995 Georgian economy was pretty much non-existent, but it was just starting to recover after the secession from the Soviet Union and from the wars. But this particular man owned a brewery, and so he had still money even in the dark days, and invited me to a restaurant. And we went straight from the airport to the restaurant. And being a vegetarian in Moscow in the mid-90s leaves a lot to desire. And then all of a sudden I ended
up... Thank God you had wine to get that calorie intake.
No, but in Russia, left a lot to be desired. But at this meal, we went from the airport to the table, and it was covered in wild mushrooms and beautiful tomatoes and plates of fresh herbs and many different kinds of cheese and beans and fermented vegetables. And then the tamada was pouring this golden color wine. And every 5 minutes or so, there was a toast. And I thought he had died and gone to artist heaven.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful. And after about 12, 13 toasts, they summoned the musicians to come in. And the musicians that came in were the same musicians that were on the CD that
Amazing.
I bought when I was 16 years old.
Synchronicity.
Exact same ones. And
I love it.
And a lot of strange things happened with Georgia, where it just seemed like a really real, vibrant, beautiful place. A place that's not plastic, a place that you could, you know, laugh all of your laughs and cry all of your tears. And for the first 10 years I was living there, we were collecting traditional songs, and I was painting. In 2006, we had the idea to start Pheasant Studios Winery. In 2007, we had our first vintage.
Amazing.
And then the world of food and wine became a much bigger part of my life.
Cool. I like that you didn't come at it from a sort of restaurant place, that you came at it more from an artist, folklore, sort of...
Yeah, it was a quest for authenticity.
Right. Which is...
But we were trying to do with music and bringing back the roots of the culture and the way voices were projected, the older tuning system. And we thought about doing something similar with the wine, trying to bring back some older varieties or less known varieties that were almost lost in Soviet times, and being able to share George's wine story with the outside world, which is arguably probably the best wine story on earth.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think now about, how do you feel about the, because I feel like Georgian wine is especially looked at now favorably, of course, with the rise of natural wine being popular in terms of pop culture. How do Georgian winemakers feel about that? Is that a, you know, it's, is it good because you're selling more, but is it also a little bit keeping it a bit at arm's length so that you remain true to...
Yes, I think as a lot of new people who bear the consumption and interest, this but it's growing interest on the Georgian wines, but I think the Georgian natural wine can't go the...
But there's a ceiling to the amount that you can produce in the way that you're producing, essentially.
Demand's growing faster than the supply, and I think also what Ramaz is saying is that, you know, when we started, if our wines weren't absolutely great, then no one would even pay any attention to us. People didn't even know where Georgia was on the map. So we had to, the only thing that we had to convince people was the juice we could put in the glass.
Right.
And now the Georgian wine is a certain category, at least in the natural wine world, and there's people that appreciate it and like it and look forward to tasting it. People that, you know, just started bottling their wine 6 months ago, all of a sudden think that they're like the top of the pyramid, and not always is their experience and ability to understand how to farm and how to make wine on the level. But in the beginning, those kinds of wines would never surface.
Right.
But now that there's kind of a certain appetite and interest, then there's a chance that there'll be less experienced and maybe less knowledgeable winemakers showing up on the market. But Shota has the least amount of experience amongst the three of us, and usually we'd like to drink his wine.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask about this, you know, the extra demand, though, also, because I feel like you could end up in a situation where you have this sort of colonial people coming in and taking...
Georgians like to make toasts when we drink.
Okay.
We've talked for a long time.
We're ready. Yeah, let's have a toast, John. Right. We're in your hands.
We've got to keep a little bit of this to taste it.
John is the
Tamada,
which is the name of...
Toastmaster.
Yeah.
Don't lower my status, you know?
No, I don't want it. I've never dared to do that.
Cheers, then.
Well, Toastmaster, I'll give a toast.
Yeah.
Sure, let's drink for love. It's the foundation for me of everything worthwhile. It matters much less what we do, it matters the spirit in which we do it. And you can, you know, write an orchestra, a symphony, for instance, and with a certain amount of aggression and anger in your heart, and it could be considered genius, and you could injure quite a lot of souls. And you could make an omelette with love and change a person's life that day. Only thing that matters is the spirit in which we do it. And so may love be at the foundation of our thoughts, ideas, the way we speak, and the way we act.
I love it. Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness.
Georgia, Sikwaru's Galmarjus.
Sikwaru's Galmarjus.
Be like, here.
Arapiriara is magis.
I like it. The intention thing is very interesting. Also, that they've, you know, they've proven, I think scientists think, that you can change the structure of matter through intention. So
Twitter,
it doesn't matter how you
materi struktura metsnira biamki tsabenro shades of a shade swallows adamiani rugori kulisma ax I radamaki go blow box I know is im hella ragots ax from Twitter materi shades of a shade swallows tau struktura
harapiria shades.
I'm not asking you to prove it. I don't know about that.
He said, I don't think the structure is going to change so much.
I love that you understood that.
I've lived in the for the last 10 years in countries where I don't speak the language, so you learn a lot about intonation and body language. Means that I'm now the human lie detector test in English, but for languages. I'll have to find the YouTube thing. I'll post the link. Okay, so we've almost polished off this bottle.
Cheers. I mean, I've got barely anything left in my glass, but...